The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Welcome in person or via technology to this faith community. Together, we strive to be a welcoming community, nurturing each other
and ourselves, dedicated to inspiring spiritual growth and promoting social justice in our world. It is good to be together today. It is good that you are here with us. Whether you are entering this space as a homecoming or you're coming here for the first time, whether you are in need of care or overflowing with joy, you and all your baggage are welcome here. You are welcome here because you are worthy, you are holy, and you make this community valuable. Yes, yes, even you. Yes, even you. I say this occasionally, maybe often actually. We are all ministers here. We are all searching, all guiding, all challenging, all supporting each other and ourselves in our spiritual lives. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, part-time hired minister, and truly honored to be serving this community of ministers. And I say that not just to say it, but also saying we share in all the ministry we do. Today is different. Because I'm the only one up here today. If you want to make that change, feel free to reach out to me or the worship committee, because I'd love to have you as a worship associate. Or if you have an idea in your mind, like so many of us have done services here, like I have an idea. I know you each have your own spiritual truths, questions, and ideas. I'm happy to meet with you. If you're like, I don't know how to make that into something, I'm happy to talk with you. We are all ministers here. We start worship, as we do each week, with the lighting of our flaming chalice, the symbol of our free faith. I've asked Teresa to come up and light the chalice and the peace lamp to recognize her and to thank her also for the wonderful Halloween party we had on Friday. You can see some of the pumpkins, and there were some pictures up there. And now we join with Unitarian Universalists across the country and around the globe in our ritual of faith, of courage, and renewal. With these words from Leslie Ahuva Fales. Tell me, friends, what have we got to lose? Our fear of failure? Our mistrust of our own talents? What wonders await us in the space between the first leap and the moment our feet touch down softly on unknown soil? Now let us light our peace lamp and respond, please, with the words on the screen. May peace be with us. Thank you, Teresa. We're continuing entering into our worshipful spiritual experience today by singing. So if you would please rise in body or in spirit, we're going to sing, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In.
Thank you.
But right now, we are going to have a story. So if anyone wants to come forward of any ages, it's fine. And there are chairs here. If this is too low, you can pull a chair up. We will also have the pictures on the screen behind me. But if you want to come forward, yes, please. Gosh, yeah. Yeah. Feel free to pull up a chair to sit on the ground. Hi, Corinne. Hi, Teresa. Yeah. No kids. I mean, I'm talking about being you unapologetically today. So sit where you are. Come up. Do what you want to do. When Pigasu meant Matisse. Picasso and Matisse. It's a good one. When Pigasu met Matisse. There once was a young pig named Pigasso. While the other piglets rolled in the mud and played games, Pigasso painted. He painted anything and everything, and in a most unusual way. At the same time, there was once a young bull named Matisse. Matisse was not like the other bulls. He wasn't interested in bullfighting. Matisse was happy only when he painted pictures, and he painted big, bold, bright pictures. This is a story based on reality. It's realistic fiction, maybe, let's say. In time, word of Pigasso's talent spread throughout the pig provinces. Soon, art-loving pigs from all over line up to buy his creations. At the same time, Matisse was getting famous in the cattle community. There weren't many households that didn't own a masterpiece. You can see they have different styles of painting here. Pigasso and Matisse were becoming art superstars, but this came with a price. Everybody wanted to see them. Art buyers, art sellers, art students, art historians, art groupies. It was an art attack. One day, Pigasso got fed up and said, "I'm tired of this noisy pig pen." At the same time, Matisse declared, "I'm sick of this crowded cow town." Needing a change, they both decided to look for a peaceful place where they could paint without distractions. So each of the two artists looked far and wide for the perfect spot. Pigasso found a lovely farm looking towards the east. Matisse found a handsome farm facing the west. After Pigasso moved in, he went to introduce himself to his new neighbor across the road. At the same time, Matisse went to introduce himself to his new neighbor across the road. That is how Pigasso met Matisse. And coincidentally, that is how Matisse met Pigasso. Yeah, they met each other. At first, Pigasso and Matisse were friendly and welcomed each other as neighbors, but soon things began to change. It started one day when Pigasso criticized one of Matisse's paintings. Then Matisse made fun of one of Pigasso's. Matisse called Pigasso an art hog. Then Pigasso called Matisse a mad cow. Matisse quipped, "You paint like a 2-year-old." Pigasso retorted, "You paint like a wild beast." Matisse raged, "Your colors look like mud." Pigasso spat, "Your paintings look like color by numbers." Then things really got out of hand. It was a modern art mess. That looks more Jackson Pollock. Yeah. Pigasso stormed off into his house. "That Matisse doesn't like my art," he huffed. "Well, I'll show him." And Matisse bullied his way into his house. "I'll give that Pigasso something he can really criticize," he snorted. Then a full-scale feud erupted, but it was a most unusual battle. Armed with ladders and buckets of paint, Matisse launched the first attack. He started at dawn. By the end of the evening, he had succeeded in transforming the outside of his house into a monster-sized masterpiece. Not to be outdone, Pigasso fired up his paintbrushes, and in full view of the enemy, counterattacked. He turned his farm into a huge and outrageous pork of art. The two artists then retreated into their houses and pulled down the shades. Pigasso certainly didn't want to look out his window and stare at a Matisse, and Matisse had no desire to give his rooms a view of a Pigasso. This presented a problem, and there seemed to be only one solution Without a word to each other, Pegaso and Mutis each began to build a huge wooden fence down the middle of their road. At first, Pegaso and Mutis seemed satisfied. Both artists went back to painting by themselves. But after a while, Pegaso was surprised to find that he missed that bull-headed Mutis. At the same time, Mutis found his studio empty without the presence of pig-headed Pegaso. Pegaso pondered. That Mutis isn't such a bad artist. He has some interesting ideas. Mutis moaned. That Pegaso may not paint like me, but he knows what he's doing. However, being naturally pig-headed and bull-headed, neither artist knew how to apologize to the other. So they did what they do best. They let their paintbrushes do the talking. Pegaso painted on one side of the fence, and Mutis painted on the other. Each worked until they were exhausted. They were strangely quiet when they were both done. Then, curious to see what Mutis had been doing, Pegaso sprinted around to the other side. At the same time, Mutis galloped over to Picasso's side. The silence was broken as the two artists began laughing at their amazing work of art. From that day on, Pegaso and Mutis became great friends. They happily took down the fence and shared their different views. A few months later, a big museum bought the fence. Pegaso called his side when Pegaso met Mutis. Mutis called his side when Mutis met Pegaso. Same thing, different style. The critics called it incredible. And here's some actual story of Picasso and Matisse. That is our story about how we can do the same thing very, very differently. And we're going to have a hymn now. It's a different hymn, so don't start singing Go Now in Peace. We're going to sing, I'll have to look behind me to remember, This Little Light of Mine. All right. We can rise in body or in spirit as the children go off down the hallway and we sing This Little Light of Mine. Different types of music, that ones we know, we think we know, and we might not. And then this next one you may know from, not from church, but from the radio, from online. And if you feel so moved, please sing along, dance, feel the Spirit in your body, or just let it wash over you for our musical reflection here.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M. Just put your paws up, 'cause you were born this way, baby. My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars. She pulled my hair, put my lipstick on, in a glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far. There's an unbearable same. I'm beautiful in my way, just I make no mistakes. I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Don't let yourself in regret, just love yourself and instead. I'm on the right track, baby, I was born this way. Born this way, baby, in the world, baby, I was born this way. Baby, I was born this way. Just be a queen, don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Give yourself prudence and love your friends. Subway can rejoice the truth. In the religion of the insecure, I must be myself, respect my youth. A different law is not sin, believe capital H. Whether you're broke or evergreen, your black, white, beige, Chola descent, your Lebanese, your Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast for leader teased, rejoice and love yourself today, 'cause baby, you were born this way. No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, Chola or Orient made, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to be brave.
Other thing, if you feel like, oh man, why did we have that? Or that was really moving, it's another time that you can get involved in worship. You can choose all the songs. Because tell you what, today, Linda and I got together to do the order of service. So what about Hallelujah by the Pentatonix, Born This Way by Lady Gaga, and then we have Prerogative, which I didn't know how to spell, nor did Linda, My Prerogative by Bobby Brown. All of which have moved me to tears at different times in my life. And all of which I think belong in church and belong in our souls. And if you have music that has moved you, let's have it happen here in worship. Born This Way. Oh, Lady Gaga, preach. Yeah, preach. When ministers get together, have you ever been ministers? You don't know, where is he going with this? What is this, like a drinking story? No, we do the same thing that any other group of people with shared interests do, right? We talk shop. So you get two people who have something in common employment, common gym membership, or specific hobbies. And when they see each other, they talk about that shared interest a lot, right? I mean, you probably know what I'm talking about. If you get in a conversation with someone with whom you can go on and on about some specific topic, stamp collecting or the Phillies, and like if you're like, that's what I live for, I can talk with you so much about this, then you know what I'm talking about. So no surprise that the same thing happens with clergy when we get together. We have these topics that we talk about. And one of our standard conversations, and this is even across faith traditions, is the time frame for worship prep. If you want to engage with a member of the clergy, you can try this classic conversation starter. When do you write your sermon? Because everyone has a different answer, from Catholic, Unitarian, Universalist, UCC, Baptist, Jewish. Anyone who has to prepare and present a weekly service will have some answer to that question of when do you prepare your message? And as you might imagine, the responses to this question are varied. They're extremely varied. I have colleagues who take a specific day each week, and that is the day that they write their entire worship service. Thursday, for example, Thursday is my study day. I sit down, and whatever I have by Friday morning, that's what I preach. That's what there is. Others take a kernel of their intended message, and they hold it in their hearts. I just told you I wasn't going to bang the mic, and I did. They hold it in their hearts the entire week with that kernel, that idea. And they live with it, and they sit with it, and they pray. They jot down ideas, they jot down inspiration as it comes, and they finalize it sort of randomly. So, for example, on Monday, I do my reading, I do my study, and then through the week, I write down little bits here and there, and little bits there, and something comes together. Still others of my colleagues, which just amazes me, go to an extreme of not writing anything. And they let the Spirit, as they interpret that, move in them in the moment as they preach extemporaneously. A big word for just you're doing it in the moment. I'll see what happens Sunday morning in the sanctuary. Wow, I'm not there. And why am I sharing this? I'm sharing this because the sort of example, the obvious example that we are all different, even in the same situation, right? Given the almost nearly identical task of writing and preaching a sermon, there are a multitude of different ways to do it. And each one can lead to a transformative, can lead to a meaningful result. I have been moved by extemporaneous preaching when the pastor Deb, who I love dearly, she gets up in the moment and she says, this is the message for today. And I said, Deb, can I have a copy of that? That was it. There's no copy. She just gets up and preaches it. I have been so moved by her services. And I've been so moved by people who write down everything and read verbatim from the lectern. There's no better. The picture book, the story I shared, has that similar message about painting. When Picasso and Matisse, they're very, very different ways of painting. And you could see in the illustrations how they tried to sort of relate to Picasso's style, relate to Matisse's style, if you know those at all. Picasso and Matisse did the very same task of painting. with exceedingly different styles and exceedingly different results. Yet neither was more moving, neither was more inspired, neither more able to move hearts. Two very, very different approaches, neither wrong, neither better. So even at the exact same task, we have different ways of approaching things. Okay, that's a sort of given, right? We got that, Andrew. We know what you're talking about. Now we go on because we have so many choices every day. Every single moment of every day we have choices. And each one of us will approach these choices, these decisions, differently and answer them in our own way. From what I wear, to how I act, to what employment I strive for, from the way I set the table, to whether I want to get married or not, and to whom, or have children or not, through the mundane everyday decisions, right? There was a spectrum right there. From the everyday mundane to the life-changing monumental decisions, we're constantly defining who we are. We're constantly defining how we live our lives. And it's much more than just painting or preaching. Those are the two examples I use. I mean, every single moment of every single day, do I turn left or do I turn right? Do I help a friend in need? Do I ignore them? Do I go to church or do I not go to church? Do I attend virtually? Do I attend in person? Do I look for a new job? What time do I wake up? What do I do with my free time? Am I happy with what I'm doing? Right? I mean, that runs the gamut from mundane to life-changing. And with each one of these decisions, with each of our choices, every small and every large, our faith imperative, the minister, I bring it all back to faith, our faith imperative is to listen to our hearts, to listen to our heart, an imperative of acknowledging our worth, of acknowledging our own dignity, I would say our divinity. That's our worth, that's our inherent dignity, of acknowledging that by being true to ourselves. That sounds easy. It's like, oh yeah, just like in the blurb for this sermon, I think I said, people say just live your life, be yourselves. Oh, great, that's easy, right? That's check, done, yeah. No, it's not that easy. This is what it takes courage. When we're talking about courage this month, that's where it takes courage, the courage to be yourself and also to do it unapologetically. Going back a little to my example, when I started preaching, not today, but when I started years ago, I would think about each service a week or more in advance. And actually, I heard Manny talk a little bit about this right before our service, which it fits right in. I would procrastinate, but I would think about it in advance. I would read books, I'd research online, I'd go for a run, I'd pray, I'd think about it, and then I'd sit in front of my computer. Yeah, and I'd be like, I should check the news again. I wonder what's happening on Facebook. But my stress would build. My stress would continue to build because I would write very little. I would produce very little. I was like, oh my gosh, I only have 5 days now. I was like, I've got to sit in front of my computer. And literally hour after hour, day after day, the stress would go up and nothing would happen. Now, unlike homework for school, not always, but sometimes, unlike homework and unlike some other jobs, not all jobs, but some other jobs, there's no way to take a sort of deadline extension on preaching, right? I mean, I can't call you. I was like, can I just have another hour? Next week. It's like Sunday morning comes at 10:30 and it's Sunday at 10:30. What do you have? That's what you have, right? So in my early days of preaching, that deadline would start to loom. And I was forced to begin, literally, and I was forced to finish. And sometimes it was Saturday night or even early on Sunday morning that I would finish. And what I preached was fine. I'm not saying that it was bad or better, but that the week preceding was always terrible. It was exceedingly difficult. Because at that time, I was not listening to my heart. I was not living into my true self. That's exactly what Manny was talking about. She could have preached this right now. I was not living into my true heart of my true self. I was trying to be someone I'm not. I was like, oh, I'll write this one a week in advance. I'll be so ready. It's not who I am. Have you ever had any of you, you don't have to say yes or no, but have any of you had a moment when you weren't it didn't feel right what you were doing. It just didn't feel what you were doing was in line with who you were. When you just sort of maybe even despised or disliked what you were doing or how you were doing it, just you don't have to say anything or tell anyone, just think to yourself. That's part of how we can be true to ourselves, right there, is by listening to our heart, by listening to our bodies, right? That's part of listening to our heart. You say, listen, I don't know what that means, but listen to your body. I'm trying to explain a feeling which I can't really put my finger on, this feeling. I'm sure that this experience and this feeling is different in different places with different people and different experiences. When I wasn't living into my true self, I was getting stressed out. I was very, very stressed, which in turn was impacting other areas of my life. That sermon non-writing stress, I couldn't focus on anything else. School or work or play, it didn't matter. I couldn't focus on it. I was thinking about the sermon. I couldn't be present with my friends or my family. The stress wasn't helping me. It wasn't helping me in that task, or it wasn't helping me in any of my life. What I needed was a way to complete my sermon prep, a way to complete my task more in line with who I was. So I'm going to do a culturally universal example. Some of you have preached sermons, but this one all of you have done, because I can see, is choosing your clothing. Yeah, I guess if I could see that you didn't, that would be a choice in of itself. But if you find yourself at your closet or at your bureau and looking at your clothing, right, just not inspired or not excited, not interested in any of your clothing, if you no longer want to wear anything that you own, that might mean that you're not living into your true self, right? I mean, you might not own that which aligns with how you want to present yourself. Culture tells us to dress in certain ways, but it might not be how we want to dress. It might not be how we want to look. That's one example. The same might go for being excited about how you spend your free time or what employment you have. That may be a sign that you aren't living into your true self. Anyone who has broken off a serious romantic relationship knows the heartache and the self-realization that come hand in hand. And hopefully for both parties, ending a romantic relationship can be about living into each person in that couple's true self, even when it may mean that romance, that relationship is ending. The heartache beforehand is that same discord we might feel in other areas when we're not living into ourselves, not living into our inner hearts. So coming back to my first example, I'm going to weave this through. As many years ago, I was talking with a colleague in Delaware, Reverend Greg, about when we write our sermons, because we talk about it. As I said, we talk about it. And he very happily replied that oftentimes he writes sermons in the last minute. I mean, like really last minute. Like he'll start putting words on paper at 6 a.m. on Sunday, which boggled my mind. Like, how can you do that? But it, more than his response, it stuck with me because of how Greg explained it. He explained his schedule with no sense of regret and no stress. He even said something, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but sort of like, I know that this is who I am and that's how I work. I write my sermon Saturday evening or Sunday morning. Wow, I mean, what if something happens Sunday morning? But he was so calm with that. And I've thought about what he said. And I began to take not the content, but the feeling of what he said to heart. I couldn't help but live into my true self. But I was being anxious about it. Greg showed me a path, unwittingly maybe, he showed me a path of working toward accepting myself, of being unapologetic to myself, right? The outcome for me hasn't changed my schedule. Nothing changes in when I write my sermons. They're still fairly close to Sunday morning, but it changed my mindset. This is the difference. It changed my mindset. I can come here to a holiday party and relax. knowing that I'm not ready at all for Sunday morning. I've been able to relax, to live into my true sense of who I am and how the Spirit moves in me, and not apologize to myself for doing something at the last minute. Now the flip side of not living into our true selves is the freedom. The freedom, the empowerment gained when we do listen to our heart. What I feel when I can come and relax, when we get to the point of listening to our heart and being our true selves, donating the clothes which don't inspire, going job hunting for a more meaningful employment, taking the hard steps to redefine a relationship, taking up a longed-for hobby, letting go of a hobby which has become a chore. Being your true self is courageous, but it's also liberating, it's freeing. And so much of this, so much of being ourselves unapologetically is knowing when to say yes and knowing when to say no. The process takes time. It takes energy for discernment, time for introspection, for thought, discernment to know what you truly want, how you feel right and true in the world. Listening to your heart and acting on it takes the courage I was talking about, the courage, the strength, and the courage to say no. To say no to yourself, to say no to others, the strength to stand up for yourself and what you feel in your inmost being. And this may sound obvious, but unapologetic living is not always easy. This is not easy. Just like Matisse and Picasso didn't get along, there will be hardships because people don't always agree with each other. Did you know that? I mean, that's not a surprise. There are going to be disagreements, right? Because that's good. Oh, hold on. Disagreements are good? Yes, disagreements are good. Because how else are we to grow? How else are we to challenge? How else are we to define ourselves except by seeing different viewpoints than our own? We have to challenge ourselves. We have to challenge each other. We need to remember, as eventually happened in the story, that different ways of approaching similar tasks aren't necessarily bad. Well, it's easy to hear, but hard to like feel here. It's like the different ways of doing the same thing as you do are not necessarily bad. And that people who do things differently than us can still be partners, can still be friends, right? I mean, we're not alone in this life. We are not alone in this life. We walk our paths always interacting with other people, which is the very reason we come here. Right? Why are you here? Not to be alone, or if you are, you've erred. We come here to give thanks for our lives, to celebrate all the mysteries of creation, to search for our own truth and meaning in community. Right? We come in community. We can do all of that alone, and we wouldn't have the support, we wouldn't have the challenge, the accountability of the community. I, in my experience, I find that the highest form of love is accountability. The highest form of love. And that doesn't, it's not, I mean, there are no Hallmark cards, like, I'm gonna hold you accountable. That's not, that doesn't sound like loving, but that is love right there, it's the accountability. That's the love, and that's why we come together in faith communities, and that's why they sustain us. If you love me, hold me accountable. If I love you, I should hold you accountable too. Accountability at its best is gently pushing our actions and our beliefs toward each other. Accountability is helping us see and align that religion of our heart and that religion of our actions. When we talk about those two religions, of helping align those two. Accountability is the voice in our head. It's the stress in our body. It's the friend's loving admonishment. It's the colleague's comment, which helps bring our actions more in line with our faith. So when I was talking with Greg about preaching, after that, I have become more loving and more accepting of myself. Yeah, just about preaching, but about other places in my life too. He embodied what I needed to do. I don't know if I've thanked him. I need to thank Greg. I'm going to thank him because he embodied self-love, unapologetic living, and calmness in his identity. So I've tried over the years to take that on, and it feels good. I spend more time with my family. I'm more relaxed through the week, and the spirit still moves when the spirit moves, so to speak. So this is what I ask you. Are there parts of your life which need more acceptance and less pressure? It can be hard. It can be really hard to accept ourselves. The task is twofold, though. Improve and accept. Yes, we can always strive for betterment. You can always strive to be a better person. We can always strive for growth. At the same time, we can be loving towards ourselves. We can still live unapologetically. And I keep talking about unapologetic living, and there's much I'm glossing over. I mean, this is I could go deep into any little topic here, especially some of these hard things. So being able to just choose and change aspects of our lives is a luxury. This is a privilege. Changing jobs or switching our wardrobe isn't always feasible. I get that. Don't be like, oh, Andrew told me to quit my job. It's like, no, I didn't say that. It's not always feasible. So look for where you can live into your true self. And watch that. Be true to yourself where you can, where you're able to be true to yourself. And it's also useful to remember that sometimes living into our true selves can be harmful. It may feel really good. And it may feel really true to yourself to drink a lot of alcohol. It may feel good to act selfishly without thinking of others. That is part of being in relationship, being in community, where we look to ourselves and listen to others, where we have accountability. Am I being true to myself and not hurting myself or others? If not, maybe I need to seek out professional help from a therapist, talk with my minister or a friend or a colleague. This unapologetic living is self-love, including that growth and that accountability. Now, I wanted to acknowledge that privilege and that difficulty of living into hedonism without delving very far. I could spend more sermons there. That's a big topic. Those are big, but I didn't want to ignore them completely. But for today, I'm going to end with some practicals. Some practicals of how we might get better at listening to our hearts, how we might get better at living unapologetically. So the first, if you're taking notes, only if you want to, right? Don't take notes if that's not who you want to be. Some people love taking notes in church. I do not. But the first is to take the time and energy to know yourself. Right? Meditate. Pray. Be silent. Listen to yourself. Think. Take that time to be alone. Again, it's a privilege if you have that time. And know who you are. Know who you want to be. You have to know first before you can start acting in line with that. Then when you make decisions, when you live your life, listen to yourself. Listen to your true inner self and accept yourself. Here's a big one for me. This has changed how I interact with people. Is try when you live to be unapologetic. As in the word sorry. Is useful, yes, but be mindful about how you use the word sorry. Of course, we need to apologize when we make a mistake, but we do not need to apologize for being ourselves. When you are being your true self, be mindful of saying sorry, and instead try thank you. That's very specific, right? We can do that. I find this especially useful when I'm going against cultural norms. Instead of saying, sorry, I didn't respond to the emails within an hour, that's who I am. I'm not going to apologize for who I am. I say, I'll be in touch tomorrow morning. Thank you for understanding. I will apologize for a mistake, but I will not apologize for who I am. So again, first, take that time to know yourself. Take that time to know who you are. Second, listen to yourself. And third, don't apologize for who you are. Only three steps. But do all of this in culture, in community, and with others who are also living into their true selves. It's so simple, so difficult, so courageous. The key is to bring your lived faith in line with your believed faith, to know yourself, to know what rings true with your soul, what resonates in your inmost being, and then do it. Amen. And as we are called to be ourselves and to bring our true selves here in this community, we now transition to matters of the heart, where anything which must flow out of us, those good, those bad, the joys, the sorrows, we share together. And I'm going to pass it over to John, who will introduce our matters of the heart.
Okay, everybody, we've come to matters of the heart. So we have a few people on Zoom and a very large group of folks here in the sanctuary, which is great to see. We are going to do this both with folks in the sanctuary. If you have a joy that's lifting you up or a sorrow that's weighing you down, you will be invited to go up to the microphone at the front one at a time and share that. While you're gathering your thoughts, we are going to play a short musical interlude so that you can gather some thoughts. And if at the end of that, if you have a desire to go up and share, you may feel free to do that. Once folks in the sanctuary have completed, we will invite those on Zoom to use the Zoom raise hand feature. I think everybody who's on Zoom is familiar with that. So you may raise your hand virtually at any time, and we will call on you individually after those here in the sanctuary have had a chance to share. So we'll have a brief musical interlude, and then we'll begin Matters of the Heart. Bring this time of sharing to a close. We'll be singing Voice Still and Small, a little variation from our normal on that. Lyrics will show up on screen here in just a minute.
Dark and rain, sorrow.
Spirit of life, earth and sea and sky, place of deep longing in my heart, find your way from silence to voice. Give me strength and courage to speak truth through my life, for I am a creature of the universe, small but infinite, a momentary body in the sea of life and also the sea itself. I am a gathered bit of energy and one who gathers, a creation and a creator. Let me not hold too tightly to one form and lose the other. For we are not form, but process, ever changing and ever renewing. Help us see that we are neither the beginning nor the end, but something perfectly natural and imperfectly divine. Amen. Please rise in body or in spirit as we sing our closing hymn, We Laugh, We Cry.
We laugh, we cry, we live, we die, we dance, we sing our song.
Bringing our time of worship to a close, we let go and we hold on. So, Teresa, if you would come forward. We let go of the flame of our community. We let go of this time and place, and even still we hold on to the love we have found here. We hold on to the charge to help ourselves and each other be our best selves without apology. We hold on to the tasks of bringing peace into our hearts, into our families, into our communities, and into the world. Do not ask what the world needs of you. Ask yourself, what makes you come alive? Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. Amen and blessed be.
Blessed be.